AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve Philadelphia, southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. If you live in that area, I'm going to ask that you go to your telephone and invite another family and friend to tune in so that our listeners will continue to grow. If you received our email this morning, email it off to another person and invite them to tune in. We'll be sending out a rebroadcast this afternoon at some time. And when you get that, send it out to a friend and help us, you know, build our family of listeners. I want to encourage all of you also to check out the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com, where you'll find many links that are highlighting the ways we're trying to help Americans get jobs, keep jobs, and of course, small businesses in the community are very, very important. First, I want to say thank you to Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connolly, who is the East Coast Vice President of SCORE, and Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm Michael Blihash, proud to be here with you today. Well, today is a very historic day for the record because just a few moments ago, I returned from the opening ceremonies, the grand opening ceremonies of the Museum of the American Revolution, which is located on 3rd and Chestnut Street, one block from the Polish American Center at 3rd and Walnut Street. And they have a beautiful ceremony. Many dignitaries are there today from surrounding states, from Washington. And I'll be returning there after today's broadcast to continue the rest of the festivities. But first, I want to say a big welcome to all of the people who have been coming into the museum at 308 Walnut Street from the Museum of the American Revolution. We got a lot of visitors who are stopping by. The museum officially opens to the public today, the 19th, and I encourage everyone to stop by. You'll be very pleased. And when you go there, remember, we are all located in historic Philadelphia. I know that many of you will be planning your trips for the summer. Well, Philadelphia is always welcoming you. You know, promoting jobs in America, today joining us first during the first part of the program is Rich Logis and Mark Andel. Promoting jobs, guys, is very important for all of the American people looking for jobs, wanting to keep their jobs, for the businesses in America that have been our main focus for many years. As I look around, I go to these various ceremonies and I speak with some of these national leaders and elected leaders. Everybody has the idea, oh, well, it happened. You know, what are you going to do? Well, my idea is focus on ways to redo things in America, get those jobs back, have some special programs opening back in the schools, restore the trades, and do what is needed to get America back on the track to having more jobs. Second half of our program, we're going to have a special guest as expected, Sarah Blackwell, you'll remember her. But first, I want to talk to Rich and Mark. Mark, how was everything in your neck of the woods in the last few days?
Excellent. How you doing, Mike and Henry? I spoke to Rich and all the listeners. Great. I hope you had a great holiday weekend. We did. Me and Jackie went down, you'd be proud, Mike, to our Broadway market downtown. And boy, was it busy Saturday.
Did you do Dingus Day on Monday?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And they had a big parade downtown, but we thought of you.
We had a big Dingus Day celebration in Philly, too. And wow, it was wonderful.
I just had a guy come in, runs radio down there. But in Buffalo, I guess they had 50,000 for the parade in that. So they had a great day. But, you know, things are going well. The Made in America is real alive. We've been busy. Spring finally broke up here in Buffalo. and everybody's getting out and doing their lawns and getting moving. It was a long winter up here. March was tougher than the January and February's. But great stuff coming up. We've got things going. Again, I want to talk, Mike, a little bit about even our President Donald Trump talking about the executive order, Buy American, Hire American, and how we feel about that, and having somebody say it. And we make Made in America stores make buying American easy, and we've been doing this. Again, we all agree we want 50-50 fair trade. We're into supporting the country of living, and that's obvious when I meet the Vietnamese and Chinese and Koreans. They all say that, support the country. They all want a quality product and allow people to have, provide for themselves by having a good skilled trade. And, Mike, I've got great moving on the PTEC program. And I think you have it there in Philadelphia. We just passed it. We've been on it for years. And last Thursday, I got interviewed to be part of a commercial that they're going to have. But PTEC's going to allow, again, a student in eighth grade to make a choice with their parents that, hey, for 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th, they'll go to school, but they'll also continue for 2 years in that same school, end up with 6 years of schooling, still graduate with the class they started. They'll walk up in 12th grade, but they'll end up with an associate's degree, a skill, and a job, because business people will be watching them and then be interested in them at 10th, 11th, and 12th. And it's a great program. It's going to help. We always wanted to show how could we make a difference in PTEC. And getting these skilled trades offered to these youth at a younger age is the ticket. But we're going to have it available in all schools this fall, west of New York. So a great start, Mike.
We are starting to have those programs up our area, too. Yep. They've been a long time coming, but they are beginning. Many of the schools are having a little bit of difficulty because putting in the equipment needed for the skills to the children to learn the skills is expensive. But I think that it's well investment. It's a good investment to get that equipment in there and get the skilled workers, even if they have to bring in some people who are semi-retired, retired, to help those kids get the idea that these trades are very, very important. We have a number of unions who are now interested to get people involved in all these various programs. If only our national leaders held our passion and wanted to have America's working age and able-bodied and young people employed and skilled, we would have never been in the situation that we're in today.
You know, I definitely agree. Rich, how do you feel, with this latest executive order, Buy American, Hire American? What's your feeling? I just think it's great to hear it, and I think we need it. It's a 35-year mistake, and we got to start believing in it and getting people to believe and educate themselves why it's so important to buy American and hire American first to get our country healthy again.
Well, Mark, good morning, Michael, to everyone. Good morning for tuning in here. Yeah, today's a monumental day, and two things, Mark. So first off, let's just get the criticism out of the way. Okay, I know the president's, some of his clothing line and some of his kids' clothing line and the stuff they make hasn't all been made in America. I've been following the D-Mike stories, that stands for Democrat Media Industrial Complex. I've been following their stories. They have like one sentence dedicated to how important Made in America is and like 45 paragraphs about how not all the items that he has sold and et cetera are made in America. So let's just get that criticism out of the way, Michael. Okay? Let's just put that to bed. And let's pretend Donald Trump's the only person in the history of America to do that. Okay, let's just get it all out of the way. Let's put it to rest. Let's stop harping on the past and let's look to the future, because this election was about truly the future of America. And if you look back on when President Obama would talk about Made in America, I mean, he talked about it here and there, but it just took a back seat to like who should use what bathroom. So the president, our current president, this is an initiative. This is a motivator. This is a political and economic issue that gets him out of bed in the morning. And I would imagine in that position as president, sometimes it's a little tough, I bet, on some days, Michael, to start that job. So this is something that we were told on the campaign. We're going to focus on this.
And Rich, I would like to.
I think it's a monumental day.
See our good president lead by example, and from now on, bring in all the buyers and say to them, "I want you to go out to the American companies and get my ties and whatever else I have, and get a quote from the American companies, get a quote from the foreign companies, and then let's move forward to help at least break a 50-50 balance for now, with more of the idea of getting more and more of the American companies uplifted in the future, making Trump and all other lines." By the way, we're talking about Trump, but how about every one of the sports teams? As I go around and I look at the various things at the sports complex, everything is foreign made. The people say, oh, well, they imprint the shirts here, but all the stuff is made elsewhere.
Yes.
And well, Mike, the thing is, you know, if I could just say, you know, one other thing here, guys, that, you know, one thing that the president is exceptionally good at, and I say this as a compliment, not as a criticism, what he's exceptionally good at is creating a branding and marketing momentum. And right now, if the momentum is created to buy American, hire American, fix the loopholes and all the visa programs. Hey, guys, look, I mean, there aren't any, Mark Anna leads this, but, you know, there's probably no collective group as much about Made in America as this show. And yet we are reasonable and we understand that trade and commerce are global, right? There are global aspects to the way that we do business, to the things we import and we export. But whatever has happened is done with. So now it's and sure, we can talk about what's happened and look to the reasons and continue to hammer the politicians over the head, which I'm always happy to do that, Michael. But going forward, I agree with you that to help with this momentum for the president in his in his business life to lead from the front, this only helps with the momentum on this, because if you think about some of the really crucial economic issues that were talked about on the campaign, if you think about why Bernard Sanders got a lot of the votes that he did, undoubtedly it had a lot to do with the Trans-Pacific Partnership gargantuan trade deal. Now, with all due respect to most Bernard Sanders voters, I suspect they probably know very little about trade. So maybe that was a motivator or not, but I think for Donald Trump voters, a significant percentage of them have lived in a working class life. Either they're in it now and they're dealing with the struggles of taxation and health care, or maybe, Michael, they have been out of the job market for a really long time, and they've personally witnessed jobs in manufacturing go overseas at times in a mass exodus over the last two decades. Granted, many of those jobs are coming back, and Scott Paul's a guy we're going to have on this show, so he can give us his State of the Union on manufacturing. So this was undoubtedly a really crucial issue. And what's very almost laughable about watching much of the criticism directed at the president, which, as we've said, we're not going to be Donald Trump sycophants on this show. I won't be. But what's funny about watching the criticism is the president is getting criticized for doing pretty much exactly what he said he would do on the campaign trail. So aren't we always like politicians lie and don't follow through on their promises, Mark? And now we're watching, you know, we watched him say we're going to get a justice in the mold of Scalia, check. You know, we're going to rip up TPP, check. We're gonna be diplomatic, but not let countries have the feeling they can walk all over us. Check. And now buy American. Check. So much of what he said he's doing. So what's the problem? You know, ideas are won and lost democratically. This is exactly what I said, Mark, to people in 2008 when they told me how upset they were that Barack Obama got elected, and then followed up in the next sentence with the fact that they stayed home. Well, guess what, dummy? You just voted for him by staying home. So you're so mad about it, what did you do about it?
Right.
If you do nothing, you still influence the outcome.
Well, I'd like to say, too, guys, you know, they don't realize when I say we have 7,000 products made in America and support just under 500 privately owned businesses, not one publicly traded company, but 7,000 products, we don't have one that plugs in, that takes electricity or takes a battery. That is a huge mistake. So to me, when our president recognizes that we've got to put an executive order that we want to make buying American and hiring American part of our system, and understand what's going on, because most people don't understand. Remember, I'm living this. If you guys caught World News last night, I like David Muir. I usually tape it. We watch it later if it's me and Jackie, whatever, catch up a little bit. But I didn't like when they mentioned what he did and then went right to Trump doesn't have this and that and Ivanka. That's fine. That's true. And moving forward, we have to. A lot of things you can't find, and I'm proof, and we do our homework. We're with the American Party. It's not an R thing, a D thing, or a union or a non-union, and that's the Made in America store. It's for America. But you have to. I don't like the news going negative 90% negative on it and 10%. World News came up with Made in America, the show. We were asked to help them and educate them why people care, why people have hope back in 2010. Eric Knoll, the producer, called us, and my nephew Dan talked to him and wanted to see what was happening in Elma, New York. So to be totally for Made in America, you've got to go with the president. It's a great initiative, like you say, Rich. It's a great start. It's somebody putting it in motion. You have to build Made in America products. You have to support the country you live in. We need average people with all different abilities to be able to have a job and provide for their family. That's what building products in your own country does.
Absolutely. And Mark, I want to just say this so that everyone knows why our effort is so important. By the way, if more of those politicians followed that example and they did their own campaign material, all those little giveaways and their shirts, allowed them to be all American made. And by the way, also, how about our sports team? Look at every sports team in town. No matter what city or state you go to, there are dozens of teams that are out there. Why can't they say, well, we're going to get prices from both the American-made stuff and we'll buy also some from foreign countries. No, they're not doing that. Everything is the dollar bill, the dollar bill. The franchise has to get their money. Just let me give you a few little examples. What happened to America? We did a special survey of what happened to America in the last 37 years. Rich, listen very closely to this, and Mark, you'll like this. First of all, in the last 37 years, we lost 77,000 industries that employed tens of millions of people across America. If you look at Philadelphia, Mark, you look at Buffalo, you can see where those industries were and where they are not now. They're located somewhere else. But back in 1980, America's population was 224 million people. There were 108 million people employed by private sector businesses, and 16 million worked in city, state, and federal government jobs. Then in 1990, the population grew to 249 million. There were 130 million people employed, and 110 of them, just 110, remember the population went up, were working in private sector or self-employed. 20 million workers then worked for the government. That went up as the population went up. We go to the year 2000. In 2000, there were 281 million people in America. 134 million were employed in private sector or self-employed jobs. But there were 22 million people working in government. It continued to grow, but the jobs didn't outpace the population. Today, on April the 19th, as we speak on this broadcast, there are 324 million people in America. 129 million people work at private and public jobs, not public, but the private sector, or they're self-employed. And 24 million people now work in the state and federal government. The summary is really unbelievable, because in 37 years, America's population grew by 129 plus million people.
Wow.
77,000 industries making everything in the kitchen sink moved out of America. 40 million jobs were lost. Today, we have 94 million Americans not in the workforce. And just in the last 6 years, we lost 5 million manufacturing jobs in America. So what makes our efforts important is we're trying to convince people to relocate, expand their operations here in the USA, where it'll help our economy and put our people to work. Businesses, new businesses especially, are looking for skilled workers so they can expand. I know that there are industries that want to open up, even in the sewing trades. They want to make shirts and they want to embroider things. They're having difficulty finding skilled workers. After 37 years of dropping all those trades and all in the schools, seeing all those companies move out of America, it's really very hard to invent the wheel. It's really hard to reinvent the wheel. We have to invent the wheel all over again. And I'm only giving you facts, not that I came up with. These are facts on the United States debt clock, which are presented by the United States Census. Now, Richard, if you and I can see that clearly, where are our nation's leaders? Where are our state leaders? Where are our local leaders?
I was just looking, Mike, at your comments here. 100 million people growth since 1980 to today, present time, and then only, 21 million jobs created.
Right.
You got a problem.
We have 94 million people not in the workforce at this time. Some of them are home watching their children. Some of them are college students in that count. But over 40 million of them are people who could have a full or part-time job today. Our efforts are saying, let's help that 40 million people get to some level of life where they can be able to support themselves and feel good about themselves. But government people, as you see, government jobs continue to grow. Just between the year 2010 and 2016, 2 million new government jobs were created. Why? Because we're trying to put people in government to hide the fact that the employment rate is so outrageous. These people should be really in private sector industries or self-employed. They should be opening businesses, trading with one another, doing something to better their life, not just to be on unemployment or welfare and all of these other programs that they're trying to push on people. Rich, what would you say to the statistics?
Well, I'm going to cite, Michael, perhaps surprisingly for some, I'm going to reference a quote that Vice President Biden once said. He said, "My father used to tell me, I don't expect the government to fix my problems, but I expect the government to understand my problems." And I have to tell you, I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more because the coal miner,
well,
see, the thing, Michael, the coal miner in Kentucky or the conveyor belt operator in Detroit, or the cheesemaker in Wisconsin, when he loses or she loses a job, I'm sure they care about what happened overseas and what jobs went overseas and what jobs are lost, certainly. But in their minds, understandably, they're there thinking, well, what about me? I lost my job. So how are we going to get this, right? People think about themselves. And I think that's probably what Vice President Biden was talking about, right? When you think like, okay, all these things have happened, but what about my job? What about my crew? How are we going to get my industry back up and running? And if you look at the election and the way the campaigning went, a lot of numbers, come out, Michael, but there was a clear distinction between the two candidates in talking about understanding your problems. Now, it remains to be seen if some of the solutions put forth will work, how well they'll work, how well and how effective they'll be. But there was a clear and measurable difference between one who believed that the presidency was an entitlement in a coronation, who ran out the clock, like holding a lead in a game, running the clock out, and another one who actually went into the cities, some of which have been really decimated by outsourcing and a lack of economic opportunity, amongst some other things. Now, the president might not have won the city of Miami. He might not have won the city of Philadelphia. He may not have won the city of Cleveland. He may not have won the city of Detroit. But he did win all those states, Michael. He did win all those states. And undoubtedly, one of the reasons those states were won is because a campaign was run saying, I understand what's happened.
Right.
Now we're going to go and try and fix it.
And Rich, I want to say this to you. As we look at some of these news media people trying to discourage any possibility of good things happening in America, more and more people are getting disgusted. They tell me, Michael, as soon as they start with the negativity, I change the channel. I don't want to be bothered. I can't listen to it anymore. I heard it all through the campaign, and now I want to see something happen in America. We got to give President Trump a chance. Give him a year to see what can be done. Already I see some positive things. People who were very doubtful say, well, I like this, I like that. And in a few minutes, we'll be talking with Sarah Blackwell, and I'm going to ask her what her thoughts are, because she was just at the White House last week. And talking about Vice President Joe Biden, I just was standing very close to him at this opening ceremony for the Museum of the American Revolution. He is one of the guest speakers there. So, I mean, it's a very interesting day for America. The executive's orders have been coming in one after the other, making sure that we're getting some new progress happening in America. I want to see President Trump lead the way, not just talk the way, but lead the way by having all of his products, let them get some purchase orders to companies here in America, help those companies grow and expand with the Trump line and Ivanka and whoever else they're complaining about. Let's get this thing moving again. I would like to see people, by the way, Mark, like David Muir, be able to go out and follow some of these purchase orders. Maybe they should follow Trump and see what he is doing to get some of those products made in America.
Yeah, you know, when I was down in the city at this Broadway market over the weekend for the holidays, I met a gentleman that Shane Stephenson. He wrote a book, and it's called Buffalo's East Side Industry. And I said, geez, how many businesses were on the East Side? He said 140 in Buffalo. So you had Curtis Wright making the airplane, the Curtis plane. You had Buffalo Forge making the forges and the drill presses and the equipment. You had the bicycles made. All different types of business. It's amazing when you break these cities down like Philadelphia, Mike, I'm sure. All the businesses that were there and that are now overseas. And it's just, you know, an industry got cleaned up. It's more computerized, automation. It's just a shame when you get this book is awesome, and it tells what we used to do. Buffalo, a second largest city in the country, most popular, and what we made. So people, even the listeners, you got to educate yourself on manufacturing and the ties, what we're talking about building in our own country. We absolutely can do it, but it's a breakdown of the supply chain, like Larkin says.
And absolutely.
It's going to take a lot of time, but we've got to start doing it. This isn't a Trump thing. This is a 35-year mistake. It's an American thing.
You are absolutely. And as I said earlier, if only the political people, the business people, the press would have the passion to talk about things the way we speak of them.
You
what are we
going
to do to bring all of this back?
Because I'm shutting off the TV, too, when I hear the different things.
Oh, I can't take it anymore.
We got to be positive. We got to go forward. Yesterday is gone. One country, one goal.
Yesterday is history. Tomorrow is a mystery. Let's do our best today. That's the bottom line. We don't want to hear what happened. That's too many rehashing the same thing over and over. We have to look to the future. And all the buyers from the sports teams, I've spoken to them, even in Philadelphia. And the deal is, once you get stuck with a contract from a foreign provider, it's very hard to get out of that contract, because many of those countries are opening up those industries in those cities of theirs and outskirts. They're opening them up from scratch. So they have to have at least an 8 to 10 year contract to make that stuff. Otherwise, they're investing all that stuff. And by the way, in some of the countries, you don't own the manufacturing buildings and stuff. Government owns those buildings. You just rent and you bring your stuff. You bring your purchase order to them. They take care of it. They have a contract. You have to rent that building whether you use it or not. I mean, everything is done against the American worker, against the American people. We're being punished for being good quality citizens while others are just taking advantage of us from all over the country and all over the world. They came in, they took our jobs, and here we are. We're very, very bad off at this point. And when you say 94 million people not in the workforce, 94 million, just take 94 pennies, 940 pennies, and they give you a small idea of what 94 million people not in the workforce is all about. Hey, guys, I have to tell you, we have a special guest with us, Sarah Blackwell. And Sarah, first of all, I'm going to ask that you introduce yourself again, because no one can introduce you better than you, and then give us a little bit of an update. I understand you were at the White House recently, and what do you think of this new executive order by President Trump? Sarah Blackwell.
Thank you. Yes, I'm Sarah Blackwell. I'm the founder and owner of Protect U.S. Workers. I have a law firm, and all I do is work with American workers and actually immigrants who are affected by H-1B and other visa programs for outsourcing of jobs and offshoring of jobs and the effect of that. I did go to the White House last week, and I am beyond overjoyed that President Trump did the order yesterday. I don't think it's the end-all, be-all. I think it's the beginning. But I'm just so grateful that he's talking about it and he's keeping at least somewhat the campaign promises that he had to focus on American jobs and the American people, because for a while it seemed a little bit like he had forgotten about the American people. So I and the people I represent and the people that contact me, we're very happy that he did the executive order of Buy American, Hire American. And actually a lot of the foreigners who have become victims of this visa program and offshoring have contacted me, and they're very grateful as well. So I am very happy about the executive order. I don't think it's the end. I don't think it can be enough. I think we have to make sure that we use this as momentum to push forward and to keep this in the media, to keep this in front of our politicians. I think we need to use this to start contacting our legislators and congressmen and saying, you know, this is important to the American people, and we have spoken. We elected President Trump because we care about America, and we care about the jobs, and we care about our private data. And so we want you to act, too. And if we do that, I think we can enact change through Congress and through the executive branch.
Sarah, I want you to know you're on the broadcast today with Rich Logis, who is the principal of RJL Technology, and Mark Andel, who is the founder of the Made in America store. Rich, I know you're a person who understands this visa situation. What kind of question would you like to ask Sarah?
Yeah, I won't say I'm an expert. Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for being on.
Hi. And thank you.
My pleasure. I want to ask you a somewhat speculative question that's going to require your imagination a little bit.
Okay.
So if right now at this moment we were talking about this issue with a President Clinton, what do you think we'd be talking about? What would the tone be? Would you be optimistic? Would you be hopeful? Just wondering this from your perspective, really being involved in this, representing workers and knowing how this is working very well.
Well, it wouldn't be my imagination at all. President Clinton was called the Indian senator. She made very clear her alliances were with the billionaire CEOs who are selling out America and our data and our people and exploiting the Indian workers here and abroad. Emphasis and TCS, Tata, those Cognizant, Those are big outsourcing companies that are really big players in this business model of selling out America. And she would do speeches, and Bill Clinton would do speeches for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for these companies. And they were throwing money into her, and this was for years when she was a senator, when she, you know, was she's constantly been involved with the Indian and outsourcing and offshoring. So I don't think it has to be an imagination at all.
Well, Sarah, that sounds really sexist to have said that. I suppose as a woman, you were told how you were supposed to vote. God forbid you used your own critical thinking based on facts and evidence to have made. Now I don't know how you voted, and I'm not going to ask you publicly because that's your own. If you wish to share it, fine. But that's your own business.
I would have never voted for Hillary Clinton under any circumstances. There's no reason in my life where I would have voted for Hillary Clinton. In fact, we watched most of the election, and my children, my 11-year-old, when we went to bed, they had declared her the victor. She was the winner when they went to bed because they have school. And my daughter was crying. I couldn't console her. She was so upset that Hillary Clinton won. So, you know, I had comments a lot from media about President Trump's comments about the woman when he was in the truck or whatever. And I was like, I don't care if you're a woman or you're a man or you're black or you're white or Indian or I don't care about race or gender. If you're for the American people, I'm going to vote you in. I care about America. I don't care about anything else. The identity of someone and who they are, what they, I don't care what they say or what they're doing. As long as they are for America and they love America and they are going to enact laws, or not enact laws because it's the president, but act in a way that is beneficial to this nation, then, yeah, I don't care what gender you are.
Well said, Sarah. Well said. Mark, what do you have to ask our great guest?
Yeah, how you doing, Sarah? Mark Andel here. You know, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Love what I'm hearing already, and I love that, you know, we share a lot of the same passion with protecting American workers. And, again, with the Made in America store, I just passed 7 years, 7,000 products, and 7 brick-and-mortar stores in Western New York. And we have 7 stores now, which are designated sections inside stores. And the message on top is consumers creating jobs with each purchase. So we joined the Kinney drugstore chain in New York, 75 stores, 25 in Vermont, and grew into a Gwanda Harley-Davidson. So they took a small store in store. But we're 100% Made in America products. I had lost half my business to China directly in 2010, $3.5 million account. And that gave me a taste of globalization. But we say 50-50 fair trade, but I support the skilled trades. And our workers, we need to grow the middle class. We're involved with a great movie, Mike and Rich know, and love to get you a copy, called The American Made Movie. It wasn't my movie, but philanthropist Clyde Insana Strickland out of Georgia produced the movie because he loved America. He had a vision for America, where we were after World War II, where we are today, how globalization can play a part, but we have to. It metaphors baseball. It's non-political. But it shows the manufacturing decline and how we have to, as a nation, produce more than we can consume. So we've done a lot, me, my family, my team, with Made in America 7 years. We've got buses. We just passed 600 buses. People visit our store in Elma and see what Americans are making. We should support entrepreneurship, inventorship, everything that built America. So everything you said about why you elect, you either liked the way America was being run or you didn't. And I'm all for the American worker. We said for country, soldier, American worker, and for our children's future. So if you believe in that, and you know, if Donald Trump believes in that, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Sarah, I have a question for you.
Okay.
How will this legislation or this executive order that was just signed help bring more jobs to America?
You know, President Trump's stance on immigration and America First has had an effect. I mean, we've had less illegal immigration. We've had much less applications for the H-1B this year than we have in a long time. I mean, we still had more than were given out, but it's down. The problem is the business model is very strong. And if we don't focus on the offshoring of jobs and data and all of that, the offshoring aspect of it, and we just look at the onshoring of the foreigners, we're missing a large piece of the puzzle. I think what President Trump did, I mean, you know, it's basic civics. He's the executive branch. He enforces the laws. He doesn't make the laws. And he basically said, hey, I'm going to put every agency known to man that I have under my belt on top of this issue. And really, that's all he could do, except for encourage the Congress people to act and change the laws, which we really, really need. So I do think that it's going to help. I think it's going to help with the fraud aspects of the visa program. But the legitimate way of using the visa program is already so awful that the laws have to be changed, and that's important. So I think him talking about it and doing the executive order, I hope, encourages people to go out and push their Congress people to make the change and make the law changes that need to be done.
Right. An executive order is one thing. The law is the law. Now, Sarah, can you, with your working on this project for a long time, how many special visas were issued each year?
Well, there's 65,000 for H-1B and then 20,000 extra for special skills exception where you have a master's degree or you make a certain amount of money. Plus, certain organizations get unlimited numbers. So there's 85 minimum, usually much more than that with the unlimited section. That's a three-year visa with a renewal of another 3 years. So that's 6 years. Plus, you get to apply for your green card and stay after that. And that's every year. And then you also have the L visa, which is a transfer visa, which is unlimited and very interesting visa because there's not a lot of tracking of it and not a lot of tracking of how many are here. And then there are multiple other types of visas. So there's hundreds of thousands of people coming here every year legally. And then OPT is crazy. I mean, you have someone who comes here and goes to school, and now they can work for several months, where it was only like a year, just a decade ago. Now it's, I think, 3 years. I don't remember what it's up to. But basically, anybody who goes to school here can get a visa that allows them to stay and get training, on-the-job training, occupational practice, practical
now, Sarah,
training or something.
Last time you were on our show, I believe you talked about Walt Disney World. Was that
when
you brought up they were hiring? How is that going now, if you could give us kind of a review?
Well, we still have a pending discrimination lawsuit against Walt Disney World. I mean, you have 250 people of every gender, race, and age, and then you replace them with all Indians, basically all male, I mean, with very few exceptions, and then most are under the age of 40. I mean, the protected statuses there are national origin, race, sometimes age, and citizenship if you're going to Department of Justice. But we have that lawsuit pending. It's a class action. It's about to have the hearing on the certification of the class action. And then I filed RICO lawsuits against the contracting companies, Cognizant HCL and Disney, for colluding to violate laws. And it was a stretch. It was not an easy case to win. And I only brought it on behalf of two of the Disney workers because it was kind of a test to see what would happen. And, you know, it did a lot of good of bringing the issue to the table. It got a lot of media attention, which was also a very big part of it because we want – Disney was a small – 250 people is not big compared to the millions of people this is happening to across the nation for the, you know, several years. I get contacted by thousands of people from all over the nation. If I had to give you a list of all the companies that are currently doing it, I mean, every insurance company right now is gutting their companies and offshoring everything. So Disney brought attention because it's Walt Disney World, and I'm almost grateful that Disney did it because, you know, this has been going on a long time. Nobody cared. Nobody's been paying attention, and all the victims are so terrified they won't speak out. When Disney did it, it got enough attention that it stayed in the media. And even the day they were speaking about the executive order the night before at the White House, they talked about the Disney case. And to me, that was very telling that the Disney case really kept this issue alive. And Leo Pereiro and Dina Moore speaking out and going to the Trump rallies and everything, I think was really important to keep this issue in the forefront.
You're absolutely right, Sarah. The Disney issue really kept it on the frying pan. It's been going on for years. Now, Sarah, the big question I want to ask you is, do we have enough qualified people in America to fill the jobs going forward?
We've always had enough qualified people. The billionaire CEOs are the only winners here. This is American and immigrants versus billionaire CEOs. This is not America versus immigrant. the billionaire CEOs, the ones who own the media, are the ones who are benefiting from this, buying the laws that are beneficial to them, and lying about not having qualified American workers. I talk to so many American workers on such a regular basis. The business models come in, fire everybody, force them to train, get rid of the jobs, and offshore them. When the Americans are training, they're not training people who are better qualified than them, or who they're just cheaper, and they're going to contact with the people who are extremely cheaper overseas. And there is a situation that I've come across on multiple occasions with American companies that are trying to hire technology or engineering people, and they're only getting, when they go to the recruiting companies, they're only getting applications for foreigners, for Indians, for people on H-1Bs, and they have to sponsor the person and do all this immigration documentation. They're like, I'm trying to hire Americans. At the same time, the Americans being fired immediately start putting their resume on Monster, Indeed.com, LinkedIn, everywhere. And it seems like those companies have offshored the recruiting, because almost inevitably the people who are training, who call me, are upset about training, upset about losing their job, and telling me that the people who contact them are always Indian, they're always out of the country, and they're offering them awful, awful job opportunities that pay very little across the country for 2 months, 3 months contract. So there seems to be a weird disconnect there, and I think there is something going on that I can't really prove, but from what I'm hearing on both sides on a regular basis, it's not a coincidence at this point.
You know, Sarah, as you're talking, something came to my mind, and I'm going to make this suggestion, good, bad, or indifferent. Is there any possibility of making a network of all these people in America who are looking for this type of job? Get them on the internet. The internet is now our way of communicating, and making sure that everybody knows the types of jobs that are available right now. And if they live in America, they should be given a priority for the next several years. And let's see if we can get those young people who've paid all that money to go to school, they have all that technology placed in their heads and minds and at their fingertips, get a job and be part of the system. I know exactly what you're talking about, because everybody in the media that I know is outsourcing something. We don't do anything local anymore. It's all outsourced somewhere. Why is that? Because these people have no, they don't pay taxes. They don't pay benefits. It's done by a faceless person. You put in the work order and it's done and the job is finished. And you charge as though the job was completed right here in the USA.
Right.
That's the big problem. When I ask people, well, how much will that cost? It's usually astronomical. Then I find out that it was done in a foreign country. I never like to mention any names of countries, but it's done in a foreign country. And I have an idea what the standards are in those countries, and yet nobody questions it. As long as I got it from what I believe to be cheaper, I'm happy. But in most cases, you're being charged the regular American-made, American service rate.
Right. And normally, I mean, IBM is one of the biggest outsourcing offshores. I mean, they hardly have anybody hire employed right now in the Western civilization. Everything's going to India, Philippines, Costa Rica for cheap, cheap labor, which is awful that you could even, it's okay for them to say it's cheap labor, which I think is so insulting to the people who are doing the work. But also the data and the information is going overseas. So, I mean, I think America needs to really pay attention to the security of our nation and to their own private information for all of the things that are being offshore. If it can be done by computer, it's being done overseas for cheap. And, you know, I think one thing that we talked about when you were saying about Made in America, you know, globalization is not a bad thing, but right now the way it's set up, it's a race to the bottom. What billionaire can pay the least amount to a country that does not protect its citizens the way we protect our citizens? They violate every human right known to man by exploiting these foreign workers. It doesn't have to be a race to the bottom. We need to find a way to continue globalization as a race to the top and uplift people instead of trying to make people as poor as possible so that the billionaires can become richer and richer. And they are the ones who hold the security of our nation. They're the ones offshoring all our private data. The insurance companies right now are offshoring all of our medical records. The Verizon, AT&T, they offshored all of our our phone records. We have a trained CSX is right here in Florida. It's a trained system, and they have information that's being accessible overseas. And the airlines have information. We have 3 shutdowns of airlines in the last year. Those are accidental computer problems. Ask IBM or ask that airline, where is that computer problem taking place? I can tell you where it took place. I was told from insiders where it took place, and it's not in the U.S., and that's scary to me because it was an accident. What happens when it's on purpose, and people need to pay attention to that? That buying a doll for your child from China is one thing, but sending your banking records to somebody that you have no control over and have no information, and they're not bound by any of our federal laws, HIPAA, our banking law, nothing. They're not bound by U.S. laws. That, to me, is very scary.
You're right. Oh, man, is that scary. And more of our even our private sector businesses are being not encouraged to do it, but forced to deal with these foreign providers because that's the only outlet that they have. Sarah, as right. I mentioned earlier, I hope that there is a way to start a network to get all of these people who are displaced from Disney and all, the people who have the technology skills that are needed by the companies to get online, maybe not a monster, but a special technology line provider where the people can go if they have services. Let's get them employed back here in the USA. As these visas are stopped, what is going to happen, Sarah?
Well, the visas aren't really going to be stopped, I don't think, at all. And I mean, honestly, I sat in on a Goldman Sachs telephone conference for all of their customers about what happens if President Trump does something about H-1Bs. And it was a person from India saying, are you joking? Like, we're offshoring everything. Don't worry about it. It's fine. We'll just offshore faster. We'll offshore more. It's no big deal. So I think we need to have the reform, but we can't make that make us feel like we are safe from losing our jobs and losing our livelihood. We have to pay attention to what the billionaires, what these companies are, these American companies are doing to this country and to our people and to foreigners, to be honest with you. So I think we need to keep this momentum going about visa changes, but we have to also pay attention to offshoring aspects.
Very good. That's a well said, because now, see, I thought things would be a little different with this executive order. But now is the time for companies in the USA to open operations to handle a lot of that stuff here in America and attract all these Verizons and all to do business with them on our shore.
Right.
There's no way we can continue to spread our records around the world. They already have so much of our properties. It's unbelievable. Right. Now we're going to be giving our information. Even they read x-rays and all overseas right. rather than reading them here in the United States. Why do we have to send it overseas? Why can't we send it to Texas or California or Florida to be read?
Well, when you're paying $6,000 a year with no workers' comp protections and all the other human rights protections that we've said as Americans, you don't get to opt out of that. You have to get minimum wage and overtime and workers' comp. You can't pretend that that's not okay. You have to do it. Whether you like it or not, you have to get that. Then the American people can't compete with $6,000 a year working 90 hours a week. I mean, for someone who's outside the U.S., it's an impossible way to compete the way it's set up. But for your outplacement, I did purchase a type of website thing where it was an American outplacement services because I have so many workers who are looking, and I have companies, but I do this all by myself. I have no assistance. So I'm the lawyer, I'm the secretary, I'm the media, I'm the advocate, I'm the one going. So I mean, if anyone out there wants to volunteer to take this on, there's a great way we could connect the companies and the people, and I think that it would be amazing help, and it'd be hard for people to say there's no qualified Americans when we have a company that literally would have a whole bank of them. It's just I need more people.
Yeah, that you're right. We need a new bank, a job bank of people qualified to do these jobs. Nothing angers me more than hearing some bureaucrats say, well, we don't have the people in America. And I think to myself, well, what are we paying all this money for education? If we don't have the people coming out of our institutions ready and able to do these jobs that we have to send over to other countries to bring these people in. Doesn't make any sense to me. But with computerization, you're right. They're able to outsource around the world and have all the people they want at their fingertips. My only concern is, and my major concern is, those hospitals that are outsourcing the x-rays and all around the world to other places are still charging the insurance providers as though those things were read here in the United States of America. The costs have not dropped because it's being done in a foreign country. You deal with Verizon or Comcast or any of them. Those costs haven't gone down because, wow, we're dealing with foreign countries. No, the cost has gone up. The profits have gone out and gone out of this world. They rose so much. It's unbelievable. But no one's been questioning it until now. Rich, what would you like to ask our special guest?
I was just, Sarah, I muted the phone so I could applaud the fact that these issues are bipartisan. It's important to note that President Obama's biggest supporters in Congress of the TPP were Republicans. They have loved total open trade, free trade, which means that small business and manufacturing not only has to compete with other companies, but we have to compete with other countries. Really difficult.
Awful.
And then the
TPP was awful.
How does a small business compete with China, right, and compete with India? How? It's not realistic. It's virtually impossible. Disney's a good target. You mentioned billionaires. The vast majority of millionaires and billionaires in the United States are Democrat voters and supporters and political contributors. Of course, there's the other side, and sure, there are some who go back and forth, but you mentioned media. Disney's one of the companies in what I call the Democrat media industrial complex. They're the owners of ABC, and a lot of other media that people are seeing every day. So it is. I was just applauding what you said, because I suspect one of your biggest challenges is going to come from other Americans who think that we need to be the provider of the world. And
I want to say this real quick, the being provider of the world. I know you have to go, all of you, but I always get on the airline and I hear the speech about the air mask coming down, and the moms have to put it on themselves before they can put it on the kids, because you don't want the mom to pass out or die. She can't help her kids if she's dead. America needs to put on their masks, and then they can help others. But if we don't take care of America, America will fall. And then what are you people going to do when you want to help others? We can't help others if we're dead or passed out. So saying that, that's how I've always felt, this need to protect America so that we can be that beacon. It's not a conservative or nationalist idea. I want to help others. I can't help others if I'm dead or passed out.
Very well said. Sarah, thank you for joining us. In behalf of Mark Andel, Rich Logis, our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, and myself, Michael Bliash, thank you, Sarah, for the update. We'll have you back soon. And I hope that you're able to get a network of all these people. Maybe some of the people that were hurt at Disney could come forward and help you, and maybe make this national network of people in technology who are able to join companies here in the United States and bring some of those jobs back to the USA. Have a great one.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
And have a great one, everyone. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, I wish you and yours the very best.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week. Sarah, thanks for all you do.
Thank you. Okay, bye.